Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Point on the Board, where politics and sports collide, where we dive into the latest sports controversies and the political narratives that shape the game. Today, we're tackling everything from the NFL's apparent love affair with Patrick Mahomes to the ambitious yet faltering launch of the unrivaled Women's Basketball League. We start with an examination of the NFL's officiating, particularly the travesty we call the AFC Championship game, where the Chiefs, obviously, as they always do, benefited from controversial calls. Some say it was luck, but more and more believe the league is trying to craft a new Tom Brady through Patrick Mahomes with quite a bit of help from the referees. We'll hear from analysts like Gene Steratore, Dan Orlovsky, and even Pat McAfee, who've all weighed in on the referee's whistle that favored Kansas City. Next, we'll explore the new Women's Basketball League, unrivaled, which promised to shine brightly, but completely miscalculated their impact without Caitlin Clark in the lineup. They really thought the WNBA's 2024 success was because of them and not Clark. Despite featuring top WNBA talent, the league has struggled with attendance and viewership. Well, to be honest, the attendance is set at about 870 some odd people every game. However, this is a case of ambition outpacing reality. And is there hope for Unrivaled to capture the glow for women's basketball? Spoiler alert, no, there is not. We'll also delve into college sports with Ohio State's masterclass in leveraging NIL deals to buy a championship team. Then the potential overhaul of the transfer portal and the steroid rumors swirling around WWE's newest star, Jordynne Grace. But the drama doesn't stop there, my friends. We'll discuss Jimmy Butler's standoff with the Miami Heat, questioning if he's overplaying his hand, as well as a political theater around transgender athletes in sports where fear-mongering Democrats continue to use hate as a staple in their playbook. And then we'll wrap it up with the dismissal of a Title IX investigation at the University of Florida and Stephen A. Smith's supposed political awakening, or is it just more opportunism? And finally, we'll close it out with the bigotry of ESPN's Ryan Clark. So strap up for a roller coaster of sports stories where the truth is often more complex than the scoreline suggests. This is the Points on the Board, where we go beyond the game to uncover the narratives shaping sports today. Welcome, my friends. Do not forget to like and share our podcast, especially this one, Points on the Board. You can find this and other podcasts at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. Alrighty, our first story is the NFL's love letter to Patrick Mahomes, crafting the next Tom Brady with a lot of help from the referees. Oh, man. Well, the NFL's officiating narrative reads less like a sports rule book and more like a fairy tale crafted to ensure Patrick Mahomes continually takes the next step to another Super Bowl. So here's how the plot thickened. Obviously, there's controversy over NFL officiating if they are under intense pressure, intense scrutiny for its officiating practices, with significant criticism centered on the perceived biases with or towards the Kansas City Chiefs. So this controversy, my friends, escalated in the AFC Championship game, as most of you who are listening to this saw, between the Chiefs and the Bills, where multiple, not just one, not just the fourth and one, but multiple referee decisions were hotly debated. And ironically, they all fell to the favor of the Kansas City Chiefs. And as we know, a critical juncture occurred on 4th-and-1 at the Chiefs' 41-yard line with the Bills executing a tush-push play involving quarterback Josh Allen to attempt a first down. Now, before we get into that, I really question the play calling by the Bills in the fourth quarter. They seemed to have puckered up a bit when they were trying to nurse their lead. Excuse me. But back to that play. Officials controversially ruled that Josh Allen was short of the first down, resulting in a turnover on downs to the Chiefs. And that call was pivotal, my friends. It allowed the Chiefs to take possession, subsequently drive down the field, and score. Now, here's what's odd. One ref says first down. The ref who couldn't see it waved it off and said, no, not first down. How much is that ref pocketing? Does he got a kid who's a big fan? Does he got a kid who's been autographed? Or is he just on his knees permanently because he loves Patrick Mahomes? We'll never know. But let the controversy swirl. Let the conspiracy theories swirl. But we as fans, and myself as a former NFL analyst and elite fantasy football player, I was ranked as one of the best in the country at one time. We are not the only ones who look at it and go, I didn't have any interest in any of this until earlier this year when the Chiefs played the Raiders. And I started to think, wow, maybe the fans and some of these analysts are right. And the Chiefs are just getting blatant calls to go their way without the NFL saying one word. In fact, this reminded me of the 1990s when Shaq was illegally obtained by the Lakers, meaning they tampered, and the league knew they tampered, but the league wanted Shaq in L.A., a bigger market. When they played two straight years, they played the Portland Trailblazers. There's a rep. I see the play. As Shaq destroys a guy, runs into him, not to mention how many times he traveled, the ref right there in front of it, and as blind as a bat. At that point, that's when I quit on the NBA. It's a fixed game. I originally grew up thinking it was just boxing that was fixed, but the NBA was fixed. Heck, they were fixed officially with gambling, too, with Tim McDonough, I think, is his name. And I believe the NFL has gone the same way. You see, the NFL is a ratings game, and it's a big business. So there's certain teams and certain players they want to see go all the way. And Patrick Mahomes is one of them. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. This is just logic. You want your best players to make it to the big dance. It means huge monster ratings. And if they can get a little help there, wink, wink, they'll take it. And if you think I'm just playing the conspiracy theory route, no, not at all. Gene Steratore, CBS rules analyst. Before the game, Steratore expressed concerns about officiating, advocating for minimal interference unless necessary. After the game, he stated, quote, "I feel like he gained it by about a third of the football, Jim," unquote. This is a rules analyst looking at it from above, best view you can get, saying it was a first down. Dan Orlovsky, the man infamously known for stepping out of bounds in the end zone like a freaking idiot. But God bless Dan. He still had the skill to play in the NFL as a backup scrub who never impressed anybody when he did get on the field for 13 years. That is the ultimate job, Dan. Congrats for holding the clipboard. And yes, I'm envious. You got to leave your dream. But it was in a bit of an embarrassing fashion. Regardless, Orlovsky criticized the call and its review process, saying, quote, "an awful call and again, a worse review. The ball is clearly past the line. Absolutely horrible," unquote. And what he was saying is the refereeing was incompetent. Then there's everybody's favorite USC quarterback, Matt Leiner, commented, quote, "awful call by the refs. Clear first down," unquote. Obviously suggesting a pattern of favorability towards the Chiefs. Harry Wasserman raised questions about the consistency of calls benefiting the Chiefs with his remark, quote, "I'm no ref conspiracy theorist, but the Chiefs ever not get the call they need," unquote. And that's how I feel. Like, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but you're pushing me in that direction, refs. Roger Goodell, you need to get off the bed of your mistress, allegedly. and start looking at what's happening in your league. Because obviously Ari Wasserman is right. He was highlighting the ongoing narrative of Chiefs favoritism. Then there's Tony Romo, CBS analyst, one of the best in the game. Because he's so good, he gets a lot of hate now. But during the broadcast of the game, Romo was obviously vocal about the call, stating, quote, "That's a first down. I don't know how they didn't see that," unquote. I mean, you can't get any better than that with the announcer going, "What the bleep?" Then there's the infamous Bill Simmons, formerly of ESPN fame, now of The Ringer. On his podcast, Simmons discussed the call, expressing disbelief and questioning the integrity of the game, saying, quote, "It's like the Chiefs have a guardian angel in the officiating crew," or, unquote, or I say, there you go, ref. Allegedly, I'm saying. Then there's the very famous Pat McAfee with his cult following from the Pat McAfee Show licensed to ESPN. They don't even own their good stuff. McAfee, known for candid commentary. Of course, he has puckered at times. He talked about the call of his show, humorously suggesting, quote, "Maybe the Chiefs should just pay the refs directly for these calls." He mentioned, quote, "It's not about rigging, but the..." Oh, no, I'm sorry. I am ahead of myself. Shannon Sharp. I forget what his show's name is. I have in my notes FS1's Undisputed. Formerly of FS1's Undisputed. There you go. Sharp dissected the call. He criticized officiating, questioned if there was an unconscious bias towards teams with high media coverage like the Chiefs. Yes, Sharp, you know there is. You play the damn game. He mentioned, quote, "It's not about rigging, but the subconscious favoring of a team can happen," unquote. Meaning the superstars not only get the call, they get every freaking call, even when it's wrong. Rich Eisen. Eisen talked about the game on his show where he pointed out, quote, "The optics aren't great when one team seems to get the benefit of the doubt time and again," unquote. Meaning they get every call. Then there's everybody's, what do they call it, nepotism quarterback, Chris Sands of NBC Sports with the white bigot named Mike Florio. Sims also weighed in. He emphasized the importance of getting these calls right in playoff games, stating, quote, "This isn't just about one play. It's about trust in the process," unquote. You dumb bleep. That was lost years ago. Then there's J.J. Watt, formerly of the Texans and the Cardinals, and obviously a future Hall of Famer. Excuse me. He didn't directly comment on this game, but he's spoken generally about officiating in high-profile games, saying on social media after another Chiefs game, quote, "It's not just this game, but it feels like big calls always go their way lately," unquote. He gets it. He knows. And what I like about all this is these people are finally starting to come out and say, enough. You know, we know you want to give the game to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I had no vested interest. But the first time in my life, I am rooting for a team to beat another team because I'm tired of that other team having the refs cheat for them. And the Chiefs obviously capitalized on all these calls in their 32-29 win over the Bills. But that said, the Bills did pucker up. They had their opportunities. Despite all the cheating, they were still there. Some fans are obviously frustrated. They say, "We're going to boycott the Super Bowl." I don't plan on why. You know, I'm at a point in my life where, I don't care. Big game. It'll be on. I'll work or I'll go do something. There was a time where I did not miss a Super Bowl since 1976. That ended a few years ago. The call has sparked widespread debate on social media, and even, as you can see, among analysts, fueling the narrative and what many see as clear, not questionable, but clear bias towards the Chief. And despite the controversy, ref, You know what? We should all go to GoFundMe and buy those refs golden knee pads. Well, hell, as much as Patrick Mahomes is earning, he's probably already paid him some gold knee pads. They upheld the review. he did not get the first down. Meanwhile, Patrick Mahomes, the win. I mean, we don't reverse the call. So, obviously, the NFL is not going to intercede, but they're going to give you your classic, we shall review all of this during the off season. You know what? They need a panel up above to go down, hey, refs, you dumb bleeps. We're not Chiefs fans. That call was a first down. I'll shut the bleep up and try to keep up. Here's the other thing out of the refs. They're like 60, 70 years old. You know, you got these world-class speed demons. And the ref, and they can't even see the call. I mean, the ref who changed the call couldn't even see the play. I waited off. I got to get rid of my money here by my gambling buddies. We got so much on the line for the Chiefs here, allegedly. Got to protect myself legally here. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter what changes come. This year has been a nightmare and a disgusting season. Don't believe me? The Chiefs versus the Raiders. This is when I was like, what the hell's happening here? The illegal shift versus false start. Initially, officials up here set the call of false start on the Raiders, which would have negated a fumble recovery by the Chiefs. It was obviously a false start. That's what they called. That's what we all saw. Instead, it was changed to, we have an illegal shift here. I got your back, Patrick. I got your back, Patrick. Change your legal shift, allowing the Chiefs to keep the possession and win the game. That ref has so much semen on his face. His wife's like, you cheating on me with another man? Chiefs versus the Texans. This was in the playoffs. Roughing the passer. This happened multiple times this year. You know, Patrick, you touch him. Bing!
Boom. Roughing the passer. 50-yard penalty. Because we like Patrick.
Chiefs versus the Bills, obviously the 4th-and-1. The Chiefs versus the Bills, a catch or no catch? A passer Chiefs receiver, Xavier Worthy, was upheld as a catch despite hitting the ground, leading to a Chiefs touchdown. Chiefs versus the Bengals, interceptions overturned by penalty. That one was a little iffy. But once again, the Chiefs got the call. Chiefs never get a controversial call go against them. That's a problem. Then a non-call on timeout against the 49ers where the assistant coach Steve Spagnuolo, who's done a brilliant job over the last couple of years, why he's not considered for any head coaching gig is beyond me. You know, I mean, the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl last year because of him, more so than anybody else. But he called the timeout, which is an automatic penalty. No flag was thrown. It's like I told my partner, losing a game for anybody, it's not about losing, it's how you lose. And when the refs interfere to cost you the game, you get bitter. So as the referee's whistle seems to sing in harmony with the Chiefs' plays, fans are left wondering if they're watching football or a scripted drama. With the NFL promising to tweak its replay system for 2025, one can only hope that future games will hinge less on the whims of officiating and more on the prowess of play. Maybe so, as long as you're not playing the Chiefs. Until then, the debate and the cheating will continue on. Is this the making of a legend or just another chapter in the annals of controversial calls? Only time will tell. And perhaps Roger Goodell, if he gets out of the bed of his mistress, allegedly can tell or will tell us. All right. Let us move on to Unrivaled, the league that thought it could outshine Caitlin Clark's glow. Welcome to the story of Unrivaled. In an ambitious attempt to revolutionized women's basketball, Unrivaled launch with much fanfare. I mean, the Athletic, they were all over these women. This is what America needs. 3-on-3 by women nobody watched in the regular season with Unrivaled. Oh, man. Again, in an ambitious attempt to revolutionize women's basketball, Unrivaled launch with much fanfare. Boasting an innovative 3-on-3 format featuring some of the WNBA's finest talent. Now, I'll admit it is some of the WNBA's finest talent. You don't know who they are. I don't know who they are. 99.9% of the country doesn't know who they are. But they are the WNBA's finest talents. If there's only one person anybody knows, Caitlin Clark. Despite its promising premise, the league stumbled out of the gate. Whoop, 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 boom, face first. Overshadowed by the absence of its would-be star, Caitlin Clark. Come on, Caitlin! Come play with us, even though we gave you 17 flagrant fouls the most in the league, even though we called you out for your white privilege, even though we didn't like you, badmouthed you, hated you, we want you in our league! Caitlin Clark said, no thanks. So, for those of you not aware, Unrivaled again is a new 3-on-3 women's basketball league featuring 36 WNBA players, and it's running from January 17th. It just started last week through March 17th. So a period of 2 months. And the league's games are going to be or are being broadcast on TNT and True TV. You know, that great sports network, True TV. The league aims to provide an innovative platform for WNBA players and its unique format. I was going to say WNBA female players, but I don't know what they identify as. I, too, can be politically correct. So let's talk about the Clark effect. The Caitlin Clark, it's not even arguably. She's the most famous women's basketball player in the world. She chose not to join Unrivaled's, supposedly to rest and focus on training for the upcoming WNBA season. Clark may have come out and said, I got white privilege. But she wasn't dumb enough to go, I'm going to play and get beat up on again after a grueling college final season going straight into the WNBA, my only break being the Olympic break. She needed a time off, and she wanted to have fun. She's famous. She wants to enjoy what her fame brings her. So supposedly it's for her body to heal, and I believe that. Instead, she'd been seen, not on the court with the 3x3 ladies, but at basketball games in Iowa, a guest of Taylor, Mr. Taylor Swift and Mrs. Travis Kelce. And rumors suggest Caitlin Clark may actually participate in the NBA All-Star Weekend, boosting her visibility. And they'll say, oh, it's boosting women's basketball visibility. Nobody cares about that. So they're talking about her being involved in the three-point contest against sharpshooters like Klay Thompson. And actually, this follows in the footsteps of Sabrina Inez Hughes' participation in the 2024 All-Star Game. Boy, wouldn't it be something if she won the three-pointer? So let's get back to the 3x3 Unrivaled League. The opening night was sold out. 870 attendees, including standing room or additional seating. Now, in all honesty, the Unrivaled League plays at the or in the Wayfair Arena, and it has a capacity, supposedly, of the way it's been set up, for 850 people to attend. So they don't care about, they knew they couldn't compete with the attendance, and they did not want to get laughed out. They were scared. They were scared because they knew they would not get the numbers at WNBA, so they set it up for only 850 spectators. That's what I got out of my research. So it boils down to True TV and TNT. Unrivaled is averaging about 204,000 viewers after 6 games across TNT and True TV in its debut season. And yes, the classic line of SpongeBob reruns beats 204,000 viewers. Not only SpongeBob reruns, infomercials at 3 a.m., public access TV, repeats of the test pattern, and the Weather Channel's live feed of puddles. All of those do better than the 204,000 Unrivaled is averaging. And they are paying these ladies millions when you put it all together. But, hey, it's higher than the National Women's Soccer League, which averages for the entire 2024 season about 175,000 viewers. Go, go! Now, you may think, Wayne, why are you so mean? Why are you so mocking it? Because every Tom, Dick, and Harry knew this was fail. Even TNT had low expectations. They were hoping for 300,000 viewers, hoping for it to grow. And the problem here is TNT committed to this before they got Caitlin Clark's okay. So they were probably assuming or pitched it as she would play. And once she did not, I'm speculating, of course, 300,000 is the number they threw out. Assuming, we should be able to get 300,000. I mean, they told us that the WNBA really blew up because of land. 200. And these numbers are dropping because it did get about 300,000 in its first couple games. Then reality set in. The Vinyl and Phantom on Monday night on TNT drew 227,000. Now, in its defense, it was competing with the college football playoffs, national championship game. Also with the inauguration, it got worse. The game afterwards averaged 140,000 viewers. And it gets even worse. Following, on the Saturday that followed, the Phantom Laces drew 113,000. Yeah, it's getting bad. And it gets even worse. The Lunar Owls Rose drew 89,000 viewers. Girl power! Women make up 60% of Unrivaled's audience to date. Where's those male feminists? Where's the white guys from Kamala to support Unrivaled? Now, that is good news. We got 60% of women, and female viewership is only 39% in the WNBA, which I found odd. 71% of men? That's where the guys from Kamala are at. Oh, man. So before Caitlin Clark entered the league, the WNBA averaged 300 viewers. So when you look at the bigger picture, these numbers are probably where you would expect them to fall, about 200,000. You know, they had the best WNBA players here, so you would figure that those ratings would follow similarly, and they have. So despite the spin that you're hearing, Unrivaled's debut night viewership was considered a disaster in executive boardrooms. Again, 2023 WNBA games without Clark averaged 300,000. And the numbers for Unrivaled are plummeting. But TNT's PR department attempted to spin the numbers as being strong. We are strong. We got big cojones. But it's clear without the cojones called Caitlin Clark, Unrivaled didn't even achieve their lower numbers. And here's the kicker. You know, Angel Reese, I'm actually more popular and better than Caitlin Clark. She's a high-profile player. Nobody wants to see somebody who can't lay up, can't hit a shot. Breonna Stewart and Nafisa Collier are in the league. So even when notable players like Reese and the ones I mentioned, Breonna Stewart, which nobody knows. I mean, I probably, outside of Reese, and the only reason you know about Reese is because everybody hates Caitlin Clark so much they tried to set up this Magic Bird-type rivalry with that. But it's Caitlin Clark's league. It's like Michael Jordan. It was Isaiah Thomas and other players, but it was Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. It was Michael Jordan, you know. It was Michael Jordan. Even Kobe was in the shadow. It was Michael Jordan. Social media engagement. However, here is some good news. Unrivaled's TikTok content performed well, generating 1.75 million views. Woo! Let's go get our money's worth of our advertising sponsors on TikTok from people who are never going to buy our products. And fans aren't dumb. They know, hey, without Caitlin Clark, y'all suck. And it's obviously a consensus among owners, players, analysts, fans that Clark's star power could have maybe put them over the top. But once she came out with her white privilege remark, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Now, the potential for growth, well, there's an unrealistic hope that Unrivaled's debut week was a strong start. But as we've seen, that was just a pipe dream. As the season progresses, they're shedding viewers, not gaining. So in retrospect, Unrivaled's journey has been a stark reminder of how one player's star power can overshadow an entire league. And Unrivaled is learning that the hard way. With Caitlin Clark opting to rest, the league is struggling to meet expectations in viewership, highlighting the harsh realities of sports entertainment, where star power significantly influences success. Whether Unrivaled can adapt, they can't, or find new stars to captivate audiences, they can't. It's not an open question. They can. Right now, Unrivaled is dying right before our eyes. I view Unrivaled more as a cautionary tale of ambition clashing with reality. All right, let us move on to what is my favorite section, the hot read, where I tackle an X amount of stories in a very concise but detailed manner around the country. First up, the NIL. Ohio State shows the way. I had to think about it. It stands for, what does it stand for? I got it in my notes. Name, image, and likeness. I always forget that. NIL, name, image, and likeness spending. Ohio State's athletic director, Ross Bjork, revealed that the football team's players received about $20 million in NIL deals over the past year. They're like operating at a deficit. I think their whole program, all their program cost them about like $380 million or four. I mean, they're way over debt. So, but they needed $20 million to buy a championship, and that's exactly what they did. And that's what they purposely played it that way. And they justified it because Michigan won it the previous year. So what was the impact of the NIL on recruitment and retention? Well, it was a significant investment that allowed Ohio State to attract top transfers like Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins and keep players who were thinking about going to the NFL like wide receiver Emeka Egbuka. This was a very smart strategic use of pay to play, and it directly was the reason they won a national championship. So what are the future implications? Well, look, I got to be honest. What no one's talking about, which I will give you the dirty little secret, is there are a lot more billionaires from non-heavyweight universities than there are from, say, Auburn, from Alabama, from Penn State. I mean, they have their share of billionaires that made it. But you're going to eventually see a Stanford becoming a player, a Las Vegas becoming a player. There's a lot of more billionaires from those schools than you can shake a stick at. You're going to see some of the one or two of them eventually going to go, I like this thought process of having this power, this control. And you're going to see second-tier schools become powerhouses. Ohio State is showing the way as Michigan did the previous year. So this will lead to a new era where financial backing through NIL will become the source of team building, and it will reshape the landscape of college sports recruitment and competitive balance. NIL portal is going to see changes. Again, name, image, and likeness. The problem with the portal right now is players, as soon as their season's in, whether they're bowl bound or not, even in bigger bowls, if they're backups or, you know, who would start the following year or who are good enough to play for the other teams or their quality, depth, and rotation purposes, they're opting out and not going to these bowl games. So there's discussion about a major change to the transfer portal with a proposal for a single transfer window in early January after the bowl season. And this would simplify the transfer process and they think would it reduce the chaos associated with multiple transfer windows. I don't think it will, because if they know they're going to transfer, you know they're going to have back deals because the NIL is like the Wild Wild West. So they're not going to want to risk injury. They're not going to say, whoa, y'all pay me $10. They're going to pay me $1 million. I'm not going to play in this bowl game. I get nothing out of it. Y'all get out of the glory, not me. I'm going to hold off and get ready to head to my other school. So in essence, it all just happened after the bowl season. Obviously, the transfer portal has led to significant player movement, and not just players, but coaches negotiating deals because of the NIL. Players are saying, show me the money. And it's not just one school. Some of these guys have moved from year to year. And this is a detriment to the amateur nature of college sports. Coaches want change. They want a more structured transfer period to manage roster changes better, especially with how many players this is happening. There's going to be a lawsuit. What kind? I don't know, but it's going to shape the future of these transfer rules. Something's got to happen. The problem is the courts has after said, you're not there for school. You're there to play football. We give you free reign. It's not that I agreed with the NCAA. The NCAA has to sleep in the bed they made, meaning they were over the top, too stringent. They were openly screwing players over as they raked in billions. And the courts turned the tide on them. Now the pendulum has shifted too much to the other side. A happy medium must be found. All right, my friends. Let us move on to Jordynne Grace, WWE future star, but steroid driven. I had no clue. But when I saw it was actually a nice looking picture of her, I was like, looks to me like this up and coming superstar may be on the juice. I don't know if she is or not. But she's hugely popular. She's a 3-time TNA Knockouts champion. That's what cracks me up. She's an 11-time World Wrestling Champion. Yeah, because the contract said, you will win this fight. You will win this match. You know, 11-time contract-driven world champion. So she's her contract has said, you will win the TNA Knockouts champion 3 times, and she has. And I don't say that they're hurt wrestling, but it irks me how they try to pretend TNA 3-time knockout champion by contract. So she's inked a multi-year deal with the WWE, and it's a move that's stirring excitement due to her popularity. She's known for having athletic prowess and memorable performances. I saw her, and my first thing I thought is somebody goes, "Hey, Jordynne, how you doing?" "Pretty good, pretty good." So speculation abounds regarding her debut, potential rivalries, and big event participation like the Royal Rumble. Hell, she could participate against the men. Why am I saying all this? Well, look at her. Let us take a look at her, and you tell me. This is Jordynne Grace. Man, Tim Allen, I need her to pick up this boat or my car to move it. There's a chatter among fans, particularly on platforms like Reddit, X, Facebook, TikTok, in essence on every single social media platform, but especially Reddit, about her muscular build and voice changes. How you doing, Jordynne? Pretty good, pretty good. It's unconfirmed speculations. Let's be clear on that without solid evidence. They haven't found the needles or the needle marks on her book. I want you to let me know your thoughts in the comments, though. Jordynne Grace. I'm terrible, I know. You just caught me in the mood this podcast. I've been terrible this whole podcast with the sarcasm, I know. Jimmy Butler overplaying his hand. Jimmy Butler, the Miami Heat, has been indefinitely suspended without pay for walking out of a shoot-around because they said, you're not going to start. Bleep you, bleep you. This is his third suspension in a month amid trade rumors, with Butler wanting to join the Phoenix Suns. Butler's lost $3.1 million because of previous suspensions, and this indefinite suspension will mean he misses at least 5 games. The Players Union plans to appeal these suspensions. I applaud the Miami Heat. Look, they might be aiming to manage the situation until the trade is feasible, but I believe it's sending the message. I believe Pat Riley's like, go bleep off. And he's tired of players dictating, I want out, so they become spoiled petulant children. And that's what he's become, a petulant grown man. And we're in an era where the pendulum's swinging back. The majority supports for the Heat here. You know, through polls on social media, web articles, general discourse, people are siding with the Miami Heat. They're tired of people like Butler. And it's his behavior. He's acting like a prima donna, like he's a victim, like he's innocent. The man's earning hundreds of millions of dollars. He's lacks professionalism, lacks discipline. He's everything bad. Parents, these are not your role models for your kids. And I agree with those who defend the Heat's need to maintain team standards. I am not on the Jimmy Butler bandwagon. Democrats fearmonger to protect men playing in women's sports. Democrats fearmongering. Democrats led by the figures like Hakeem Jeffries. There's no election deniers here. Then somebody puts up about 12 minutes of video of Hakeem alone. Trump didn't win the election. Trump didn't win the election. But I digress. Anyway, Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats are using fear tactics when they tried to oppose H.R. House Resolution 28, branding it as the House Republican Child Predator Empowerment Act. The claim it would require genital inspections. Hey, see, what happened is Hakeem Jeffries is confusing his party's love of little boys and girls with the bill. Now, in his defense, there's Republican rhinos like that too. But anyway, the claim it would require genital inspections for female athletes. A fear-mongering narrative that AOC said that girl's dumber than dumb. I mean, I've never seen a more stupid woman in my life that represents America, a district in America. It's embarrassing. I've had my friends and family in Panama make fun of her. I mean, these are poor uneducated people going, man, that's a dumb hoe. That's the one that somebody told me once. I was like, bro, because he said it in front of my aunt, a grown woman. I was like, why are you talking like that? Come on, man, show a little respect. But that's how they look at her. That was a quote. Democrats are criticized for spreading misinformation, which is what this is, with statements from Representative Pete Aguilar suggesting the bill would affect children's recreational games. And that's not true. It only applies to sports funded by the government. So if that Pee Wee League is getting money from the government, then yes, it would affect them. But they're not. It's an attempt to distract from the core issue of fairness in sports. Look, there's a backlash in America. Get men out of female sports. I've been covering this for over a year and a half now on Points on the Board. And guess what? The Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act of 2025, H.R. 28, successfully passed the House with a vote of 218 to 206. There are 206 Democrats who are okay with men beating the shit out of women. As we saw with a fight with a kill shot in volleyball, the poor girl got hit in the head. She's still suffering head brain trauma. You see a grown man competing in track and field. There's one guy, his spikes came off. His shoe got untied. Yeah, he still quickly and easily booked past the woman. And you can see the size differential. I'm a woman. The passage reflects strong Republican support and a few Democrats voting across party lines. And this highlights a national conversation and division that is now swinging to the proper side. Get transgender, which transgender women are nothing but men claiming to be women, out of female sports. Me Too, false narrative fails. And some late breaking news. The University of Florida has dismissed its Title IX investigation into men's basketball coach Todd Golden after finding no evidence to support allegations of sexual harassment, sexual exploitation, stalking, and cyberstalking. Golden's lawyer, William Shepard, confirmed the dismissal, stating that the university concluded the complaint was meritless. Golden's Florida Gators are doing pretty good. They are ranked number 5 in the computer and like 6 or 7 in the coaches' rankings here. Now, Golden's attorney also criticized those who did not respect the investigative process, i.e. the mainstream media. You got to believe a woman. Despite no evidence, you got to believe a woman. What? There's a man accusing women? Oh, we need to wait for the evidence to come out. It's hypocrisy. The Me Too movement is nothing but a political travesty. Believe the woman, regardless. Well, that's what they wanted to hear. The Me Too movement wanted everybody to believe the women, and they were lying. Now, they haven't come out and said they were lying, but what other conclusion can you come to? Because this was multiple women. Hey, Betty, come on over here. Susie Q, come on over here. Dave!
Yeah, what do you need me for?
We got to accuse this coach. It failed. And I just wanted the truth. And if the evidence says there was nothing, then more power to Golden and damn these women with their false accusations. We must protect all women, but when accusations are made, we must follow the evidence, period. Stephen A. Smith sees the light or goes where the political winds blow. Stephen A. Smith regrets voting for Kamala Harris. On Real Time with Bill Maher, Stephen A. Smith expressed regret, feeling that Democrat voters were misled. They weren't misled. They've been lied to. And Stephen A. Smith knows they've been fed lies. It's just the race game is a billion-dollar industry, and he knows how to play to his audience. He also criticized the lack of a primary contest for the Democratic nomination. He could have said all of this beforehand, but he says it afterwards because the winds are shifting. He got to get on the boat that's going to ride him to the rainbow of gold. He's got a new contract coming up. He's also vocal and frustrated with the release of illegal immigrants from custody. Again, jumping on the bandwagon, didn't hear much of any of this beforehand. Smith's appearance on conservative platforms like the Rubin Report and his subsequent comments have been met with skepticism, specifically from Jason Whitlock, who I love to death. Why? Because he's not afraid to speak the truth. And he sees Smith's stance as I do, opportunistic or a, quote, grift, unquote, following Trump's landslide victory. There's no debate about Smith's authenticity and political alignment. He goes where the political winds blow. Ryan Clark, ESPN's resident race-baiting bigot. Jason Whitlock has criticized ESPN's Ryan Clark, comparing him to Charles Barkley and Terry Bradshaw. I'll never forget Terry Bradshaw. You know, Aaron Rodgers, I'm making this a horse meditation. Terry, get a grip. And let me cue you in. I saw your first season. I can tolerate no more of your reality show. Your daughters are just waiting for you to die, bro. Sad but true. Get some discipline in them. They're just waiting for you to go. Collect on all that money you've earned. And look, people, Terry Bradshaw was my idol growing up. Read his biography, everything. It's just the last few years, like, dude, you're an idiot. Hollywood Henderson was right. You can't spell cat if they spot you the C and the T. That's not true, but it's a fun joke and easy to poke at. He's such a buffoon. Anyway, Whitlock argues Clark represents a decline in sports broadcasting authenticity because all he focuses on is race instead of being a sports analyst. He won an Emmy because he's a race-baiting bigot, and that's what counts at ESPN and in the mainstream media. He had a controversy with Tua Tagovailoa and apologized to him and Whitlock, and I agree with him. He apologized to him. The apology he needed to do. But the point is these analysts align with the players. The players are their friends. They don't criticize him unless it's somebody he doesn't like Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't like Aaron Rodgers because he's been successful and he's white. That's why Ryan Clark doesn't like him. People, look, I come from a family where we have white, black, rich, poor, straight, gay, you name it. And I had nothing but love until I came to the States and I saw all this racial hate. And then I started realizing, well, it's not really coming from white America like the media is actually saying it is. It's coming from people like Clark, like Jemele Hill, like John Lee Guizamo, the Latinx lover. Boy, man, there's something about, you want to see a Latino who's not a man, John Lee Guizamo. You know, it's coming from minorities who have learned how to play the system for their own personal gain. Again, the racist industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. If white racism was as bad as they say, then why have there been over 400 race hoaxes from like 2012 to 2020 or something like that? I've got to pull that data out. I have it in my book. If it was so prevalent, why are they making it up? And those are technically hate crimes, and they're not being prosecuted. Jussie Smollett should have been prosecuted as a hate crime. Again, they know how to play the system. Whitlock suggests Clark's actions and the broader sports media's behavior illustrate a corporate media disdain for its viewers, because they will chastise and blame their viewers before they blame or look in the mirror themselves or the athlete. In essence, the media is instead maintaining favor with athletes and avoiding controversial or unpopular opinions, thereby failing in their responsibility to sports fans. And there you have it, my friends. Points on the board. I hope you've enjoyed this show. I hope you enjoyed it, a hard, ugly truth look at the Kansas City Chiefs benefiting from refs who have been on their knees for them for the last few seasons. And it's really gone to OD madness at this point. And unrivaled, who actually thought they could make it work without Caitlin Clark. Oh, the shame, the shame. And I hope you liked the hot read. Do not forget to like and share this podcast. We are growing. We are an all-volunteer group here. So you can help out by simply following, subscribing, and sharing to this podcast, subscribing to Grumlings Media on YouTube, on Rumble, on our traditional podcast outlets such as Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. You can find this podcast as well as my conservative talk podcast called Fired Up and my cultural podcast, Pop Culture, covering music, entertainment, gaming, Hollywood, etc., and the political aspects of it because politics is downstream of culture. The Red, White, and Rude. That's what that podcast is called. You can find all those podcasts at grumblingsmedia.com. Thank you, my friends, for tuning in. Thank you for the support and the love. And until next week, I am William Del Pilar for Points on the Board. I bid you adieu.